present the News Quiz with your chairman, Simon Hoggart.
Hello, and welcome to the News Quiz. We start with a BBC trail read by Charlotte Green.
Strictly Come Dancing chef James Martin is in the kitchen now, and it's not his feet he's worrying about, it's crabs.
Thanks to Diana Mayrick Thomas for spotting that. Let's meet the teams. Please welcome first on my right, Francis Ween and Armando Iannucci. Opposite them on my left, Alan Corran and Jeremy Hardy. Francis, for whom did cracking the ministerial code produce an SOS?
David Blunkett's resigned.
Yes?
It's not really news, is it? I mean, it's an annual event. It's like the Eurovision Song Contest. It's something you expect. It's that time of year, Christmas coming. Blunkett must be resigning. And he has. He's actually under a year. I think he's resigned twice in under 11 months, which is a Commonwealth all-comers record. Peter Mandelson must be very annoyed. But it's the great thing about Blunkett is he goes to Good Valley because it looks like a repeat every year when he resigns. And actually, if you study it, it's not. It's all new episodes. Because last time round, it was all Kimberly Quinn and nannies and railway warrants and stuff. And it's a completely different set of stories this time. It's there's a new woman, Pamela Anderson, I think she's called, isn't she? Some sort of strange blonde Max Clifford-y sort of character. And then there are all these DNA testing companies and shares. And there was a Jewish school in there somewhere as well. I didn't quite see how that featured, but it's non-stop. It makes Bleak House look very simple to understand.
He could be back in by the repeat, though, couldn't he?
It does all relate, though, because he blew all his money on this paternity suit, and so he was worried about his son's inheritance. I would be, frankly, I'm not a great believer in genetic traits, but I think it would help explain some things if you found out Blunkett was your natural father, why you felt a sudden inexplicable urge to run into a gypsy camp with a pitchfork or something like that. You do have to feel slightly sorry for this poor tyke, don't you, that's going to have to spend every other weekend with a scary bearded lunatic just because he happened to swing by when his mother was ovulating.
I mean, the amount of collateral damage he leaves, all these bystanders and bit players, and the very day he resigned, he went off and had drinks or dinner or something with the editor of The Sun, and she ended up spending a night in the police cells afterwards. Absolutely lethal.
And the other Mitchell brother is...
It was a very bad night for the Mitchell brothers.
And they say it's all unrelated. All the Mitchell brothers are being slapped, allegedly. But they're all unconnected. I think this all has the hallmarks of Al-Qaeda.
David Blunkett has resigned again after breaching ministerial codes of conduct by failing to consult the advisory committee on business appointments about jobs he took up after his last resignation. The ministerial code is in part intended to prevent members of the government from taking on roles that might conflict with their jobs as ministers. So, Defence Secretary John Reid can't work for a defence firm, Health Secretary Patricia Hewitt can't work for Bupa, and John Prescott can take any job he bloody well likes. 2 points to Francis. Armando, who's counting the cost of the bill this week?
Is this a police question?
Well, only indirectly.
Is this a parliamentary bill?
It is.
Surprisingly, there was a backbench rebellion against the treating backbenchers like cattle bill. And they all revolted. And it's the government's attempt to stop us having emotions. We are not allowed to glorify terrorism. But they managed to... They came up with a compromise... We're allowed to be mildly satisfied with it, but not overly exuberant with it. And we're allowed to go ahead with, like, Bonfire Night. We're allowed to do that and glorify Guy Fawkes's actions.
We don't glorify poor old Guy Fawkes. We bung him on the fire and burn him. You think about it, this was... I know I'm glorifying terrorism now, but this was a man who would... In any other country, he would be a hero. But in this country, we burn an effigy of a man who tried to blow up the monarchy and the government at the same time.
Charles Clarke looks a bit like a Guy Fawkes, doesn't he?
Doesn't he? Looks like Fungus the Bogeyman.
But he's desperately trying to get this thing through where you can hold suspects for a really, really long time. Because the trouble is it takes longer to gather evidence now that they've outsourced the framing of terror suspects to places like Algeria and stuff. Often they've already got the confessions. They're already in hand, thankfully, owing to the torture and stuff. But to actually get the rest of the evidence fabricated and all that, that can take a very old...
The government's bill on terrorism was looking very wobbly this week after a backbench rebellion in the Commons. Charles Clarke has shelved his plans for detention without charge for up to 90 days. Unfortunately, he shelved them between his copy of 1984 and Mein Kampf.
In World at One, they had Charles Faulkner on, and he said that the government was undeterred. I thought, I don't know if they're under it, but they're certainly in it.
Jeremy, who asked the White House to turn green?
Oh, Charles has gone with Camilla, who's been getting a lot of stick, poor old girl. But he's taken her over there and they're all being mean to her. But he would have a certain amount in common with Bush, given that they both owe their positions to their parents and neither of them's very bright. But he would have been a bit disappointed, because normally when he arrives somewhere, he gets exciting dances by lots of indigenous ladies instead of just getting to see a Texan walking, was all he got when he arrived in America. But he doesn't agree, because he's quite against global warming. And there's a slight difference of opinion with America in that they're in favour of global warming. Well, they're not. Well, Bush's answer to global warming is to bomb anywhere that's hot.
During his first official visit abroad with the Duchess of Cornwall, the Prince of Wales has used his trip to the US to speak about climate change with President Bush. One banner in Washington inaccurately read, "Welcome, Prince Charles and the Duchess of Wales." Which, of course, is wrong. They weren't welcome. Charles urged George Bush to join him in fighting a common concern. And troops are expected to attack Nicholas Witchell any day. Alan, listen to this. Tell you that will be no use to you at all in answering.
My younger news is Eye of the Tiger. I think it's that bloke who knocked Sylvester Stallone about on the steps of something many years ago.
No, we tend to be slightly more topical than
do we? You could have played anything, it was going to be no help to me. Melancholy Baby would have gone down very well. I always like that.
Alan, which big fight had two contestants in the blue corner?
It's not a conservative leadership.
It
question.
Is, 2 points. And oh, yeah. The end of round one.
Where did the Eye of the Tiger come in? Is David Cameron nicknamed Tiger? Do his friends call him Tiger Cameron?
No, of course not.
Can we phone a friend over this one?
It's about a fight. It's David Davis. And, of course, David Davis got a broken nose and was a member of the ARP or something in his youth. It's all about, fighting.
He was in the TA version of the SAS. So he could strangle men with piano wire, but only at weekends.
Well, it's wonderful.
You answer him, we'll guess.
Oh, you've got it right, you've got
was.
The points. It's Cameron versus Davis. Anything to say? No, I thought not.
Well, not tonight. They're on the telly yesterday or 2 days ago.
Yes.
And so it's a really rotten question, that. It's really unfair, because we don't know quite how exciting it will have been. How on the edge of our seats we would have been if we'd been
this is the Dimbleby thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, boy.
The thing is, they're bound to both say, or bound to have both said in the past, that the important thing is that we are both conservatives. You think, yeah, well, that's your problem, really.
Dimbleby is always so high in the seat in question time, his natural superciliousness is not enough. They have to winch him up above these people.
He's got a lucky space hopper. Never does a recording without it.
And he's a sort of melted Tory, Cameron.
Melted Tory?
Melted, yes. They used to, about 20 years ago, old Tories used to look slightly melted, slightly smooth, you know, James
like a
Pryor.
Wedding cake that's been left out in the rain. It was Millen's face was like that, wasn't it?
Yeah. James Pryor and Edward Heath, they were just slightly succulent around the cheeks.
This week, the two leadership contenders in the Tory party leadership race went head-to-head on Question Time with David Dimbleby. It's the first time the pair have appeared together on TV since they were voted off Strictly Come Dancing last week.
Actually, this debate, they said on the news, only half the audience were members of the Conservative Party. You think, God, that's the best they can do now, isn't it? They can't even fill half a TV studio.
The end of round one. The scores are, everybody, 4 points. We start round two with a leaflet about Operation Christmas Child.
This annual project enables caring individuals, families, schools, churches, businesses and other organisations to fill ordinary shoeboxes with small toys, school supplies, sweets and other gifts for hurting children around the world.
Our thanks to the many of you who sent that in. Francis, why are these testing times for Britons?
It's another of these citizenship exams that people have to sit. I think Blunkett started all this business, but about every other week. Nothing ever comes of this, as far as I know. I mean, they've already done all this. But do you have to do a kind of common entrance or a GCSE or something saying... It's all to do with your knowledge of what is the point of the Church of England? Not an easy question to answer, really. And what are bank holidays? I think was one of them. And why does David Blunkett keep resigning? Those sorts of things that...
Are you now or have you ever been fast-tracked by David Blunkett?
None of us could do any of the answers, though. I mean, there's much glee among columnists. Every columnist last week wrote about not being able to answer any of the things. It's true, I couldn't do any of them. Does your citizenship get taken away from you?
Yeah.
Be a citizen of Rockall. I know all there is to know about Rockall.
I know Rockall.
And then the final question is, what are the 39 steps? If you answer that, you get shot.
From this week, people applying to become British citizens will have to pass a new test to get a passport.
Do you think they'll have to relinquish their sporting abilities when they become a citizen?
Armando, why should you dial M for murder or hold to speak to an operator?
Oh, this is phoning the police. There was a report lambasting the police call-out system. If you ring the police... It took on average 48 hours for them to get you, which I don't... unless...
That's because the call centre's in Mumbai.
That's right. Unless they use one of those systems that you use to book cinema tickets, because that takes about 5 days to...
Press one if the burglar is in the house.
It's when you actually... It's when they actually have to do... When you have to actually speak. So, you know, what's happened to your leg? I've been stabbed. Badly? Yes. You have been stabbed badly outside the cinema before going in to see Wallace and Gromit. You're 19th in line.
Damning report into police call centres from the Chief Inspector of Constabulary found callers can wait up to 48 hours for police to attend a non-emergency call. The report also criticised the patronising tone of operators. One man caught up in a post office raid called the police only to be told he was being held in a queue. Some forces now plan to filter calls by introducing options. For an emergency, press 1. For a non-emergency, press 2. And to get a bent vice cop to deliver your drugs, press the hash key.
What is a non-emergency call to the police?
Well, lots of people phoning in saying things like, do you think brown shoes go with a blue suit? They do. Most 999 calls are things like, my cat looks a bit poorly, do you think I should take him to the vet? Or beat him to death with a coal hammer?
I'm carrying a chair leg. Should I go out and walk past policemen?
What do you think I look like naked? So it's nothing to do with the question, I was just asking.
Jeremy, listen to this. Beethoven's Third Symphony. Jeremy, why is this week's UN warning nothing to sneeze at?
This is clearly a bird flu question, and a man called Nabarro, which made me think perhaps the Tories have dug up Gerald in a desperate attempt to find someone charismatic to lead their party. But he's either, or somebody with the same name, spoke to the House of Lords And he had to advise them on what the UN is going to do in the event of bird flu, which is, of course, nothing, because the UN is entirely useless. It's got 170-odd members, and most of them only turn up for the free headphones. only has the power to do things if America says it can. We don't know if America is for or against bird flu. but he said that he was worried that there will be lockdown and that it won't be possible to treat bird flu because all countries will have grounded their air forces, there'll be hose pipe bans, and we'll all be told to save milk bottle tops and things like that.
I was just wondering, was it John Reid, the Defence Secretary, has been arguing about the need for a new nuclear deterrent, which makes me wonder whether the plan is to nuke any bird that comes.
Yeah, but a very strange reason for it, though, which stuck in the craw, if not the memory. He said it should be. We should retain it for use against rogue states. Is that a one? You get a sort of view of Leslie Phillips. So what exactly is a rogue state?
State.
A bit of a scallywag state.
Senior UN official David Nabarro this week told the House of Lords Committee that the bird flu pandemic could lead to countries closing their borders, withdrawing their diplomats and operating a general lockdown. The claim that bird flu could lead to countries completely sealing their borders has led to calls from David Davis for the NHS to make H5N1 virus freely available everywhere in the UK. Dr. Nabarro warned a bird flu outbreak could lead to aeroplane traffic being completely shut down across Europe, a job normally left to Gate Gourmet. Alan, what latest proposal has already gone off the rails?
This is, I think it's this thing about the £1 train ticket.
Nice try, but wrong.
Well, is it the drinking on the train?
Yes.
It's a great pity, because two stories came out together. Apparently, just like air miles, if you really want to travel from Doncaster to Estonia at 3 a.m, you can get a ticket for £1 on any Virgin Network train. But you won't be able to drink on it, because it was deemed unwise to allow people who should be drinking in 24-hour pubs actually to be able to drink on trains as well, because it would take away decent pub time. The government has, it's been a week of backpedalling. They've backpedalled on 90 days and they've backpedalled on this, and they're now no longer going ahead with this thing to stop you drinking on trains. You can't smoke on any of them, mainly because the breath of the combined passengers will be so...
It's a bit silly trying to look after us. I mean, if you're on a train, you haven't got long to live anyway, have you, really? They should have banned drinking in the boardrooms of Jarvis and Balfour Beatty, maybe.
I just like the...
No, don't clap, it means it's a well-made point, but not funny.
No, I was just going to say, I rather like the image of the government's train policy involving a lot of backpedalling. Which is sort of where it went wrong in the first place.
Government's plans to ban drinking on public transport have been heavily criticised. People say they couldn't organise a temperance rally in the Salvation Army Hall. The ban is part of the Prime Minister's Respect campaign, which also includes the Whatever initiative. And a shut your mouth, you slag white paper.
That's Rebecca Wade saying that, isn't it?
At the end of round two, everybody has 8 points. Before we start round, there's a sign seen at the Royal Derbyshire Infirmary.
Family planning, use rear entrance.
Thank you very much, S. Joy, for that one. Francis, where did Stone Age Man decide to give it a rest?
I know.
Says Stone Age Man.
You're a professor, you know about things like this. Professor Iannucci here of Oxford University doesn't even know about Stone Age Man.
I know.
Are you chewing?
They found Neolithic homes that are older than Stonehenge, which proves that Stonehenge is actually a conversion.
Has it been knocked through?
Yeah, that's right. It used to be a big round wall. But it was a corn exchange. No, they... actually, it must have been nice in Neolithic times. Nothing had been something else before. Everything was new, unless they did, I don't know, luxury cairn apartments in those days. But did cairns come later? I don't know. Dear BBC... I've got letters about that. Dear Roger Bolton, why not stab the back of BBC employees while taking the BBC's money?
This week, some people have written saying Jeremy Hardy should be killed, and I can't agree more heartily.
At least Chris Dunkley was of the Financial Times. That was a many hyphenated name, that was. Chris Dunkley of the Financial Times. He wore a bow tie. Never trust a man in a bow tie. They always think they're eccentrics and they're just like perverts.
No, nor that Chris Dunkley is going to write to feedback.
Archaeologists have for the first time found evidence that Neolithic man lived in fixed settlements after uncovering the remains of late Stone Age homes in a quarry near Millfield in the northeast of England. Until this find, academics were unsure whether late Stone Age man lived a mobile existence, though they did find a cave painting of Neolithic man shouting, "Can't speak now, darling, I'm on the mastodon." Armando, where is finding a cheap bungalow a complete and utter beach?
This is the most expensive bungalow in the world, which is somewhere in a little island or islet or isthmus off Dorset. But it just looks like the sort of bungalow where you can imagine a very bitter old man living. And it's valued at £3 million.
It'll be a new Channel 4 show, undoubtedly. Peter only has £3 million to spend on his bungalow in Dorset. And it's just all these horrible people on Channel 4. And it's always, Justin and Alexandra have £250,000. Not quite enough for their seventh barn conversion in Tuscany. Think, well, poor bloody Justin and Alexandra. If they've got a spare £250,000, take them to a warm, dusty place and leave them by the side of the road to be gagged and robbed.
Almost simply, two to the head, one to the chest. It's done. Only costs £7,000, apparently. Get a man killed.
What, in Chalfont St Giles? It's about £4.50 to South Lantern.
And it's a very specific man.
The little man in the village that does all our hits for us. He's absolutely marvellous.
It's a dilapidated bungalow on the exclusive Sandbanks Peninsula in Dorset, has sold for £3 million. The bungalow attracted many bids, the lowest being for just £200 from Professor Martin, an expert in coastal erosion. Jeremy, who's been pandering to his wanderlust?
Oh, his little red panda, he's so cute. Babu, he's really sweet. And I didn't know there were red pandas, because traditionally, this country, we had red pandas, and it was when the grey pandas came from America. And scared us off. No, there's a cute red panda in Birmingham, where I'm going next Tuesday. People of Birmingham, come and see me at the Glee Club. I don't know why it's called the Glee Club in Birmingham. But it used to be the Misery Ballroom. But in Birmingham, he was escaped, and I was hoping that I'd be leaving the gig and there'd be a little furry friend on the back seat saying, "Take me to London, Governor." Except he's a Brummy, so it'd be, "Take me to London." He's so cute. And because normally pandas, you think of pandas as having that sort of weird black-eyed, you know, live with Rebecca Wade type look. And spend a lot of time in zoos enjoying platonic relationships with their mates. But also, it turns out that pandas are red and called Babu and really, really sweet. But he's been captured. He was probably trying to make a break for London, where the zoo's probably better than in Birmingham, because in Birmingham it's probably just an old asthmatic circus lion and one meerkat with no legs.
That's a slug, isn't it?
A red panda which escaped from a Birmingham nature park has been found and returned to his pen. The panda only agreed to come down from his tree after police promised him he could drive the panda car back to the... Red Panda said his original plan was to head for London, but he changed his mind after an otter he met at the bus station told him he looked a bit Brazilian. Alan, which rodents can tell their arias from their elbows?
Yes, this is singing mice. Washington University has discovered singing mice. I don't know where, but they sing ultrasonically, which is a little bit of a waste of time. Tom and Jerry the musical will not pack them in because you will not be able to hear it unless you're another mouse. But they sing sexual things to one another and directions and recipes and mind the cat. But they're only one of four species of things that can sing. It's the human being, the dolphin, the bat, and the mouse.
You can put the four of them together and it'd be a supergroup.
A team of scientists at Washington University School of Medicine discovered that mice sing high-pitched songs when sexually aroused. They love to sing at the top of their voices, though they usually turn it down a bit when poor old Fred with a giant ear sewn on his back pops around. At the end of round three, Francis and Amanda have 10 points, but Alan and Jeremy are in the lead with 14. Before we reveal the final scores, let's hear the cuttings the teams have brought along. Francis.
Simon, this is from the Financial Times this week. A quote from the owner of Blackpool Pleasure Beach talking about roller coasters. When you put in a new ride, you only sustain the extra visitors for a certain amount of time. Then they drop off.
Amanda.
This is sent in by John Oliver. It says, the following was spotted in the Bristol Evening Post letters page. I am desperately trying to find the lady who was unbelievably kind to me and my husband 3 weeks ago one Thursday morning. My husband was taking my two golden retrievers for a walk to Willsbridge Mill, and on the way home, halfway up Willsbridge Hill, my youngest dog collapsed. My husband, being 80 years old, was extremely distressed, and a lady driving by stopped her car and proceeded to flag down the refuse collectors.
Jeremy.
It's from the Western Times. A Sidmouth man who pleaded guilty at Honiton this week to drunken and disorderly behaviour said that he had been drinking heavily because he had become deeply depressed about having become a heavy drinker.
From the Birmingham Post, Simon says, Simpson was apprehended and charged with burglary after breaking his ankle when he jumped from a first-floor window. He told the arresting officer, this is bloody embarrassing for me. Both my sons are in the parachute regiment.
Thank you. Let's look at the final score. Francis and Amanda have 12, but Alan and Jeremy clear winners this week with 20 points. Before we leave you, here's a cutting from the National Trust leaflet, Welcome to Charlecote Park, sent in by Craig Mackay.
Please note, the gate to the graveyard is one way.
Goodbye.
In the news gifts were Francis Wheen, Armando Iannucci, Jeremy Hardy and Alan Corrin. The chairman was Simon Hoggett and the news is read by me, Charlotte Green. The chairman's script was written by George Poles, Simon Littlefield, Paul Parenza and Rodri Crooks. And the producer was Katie Tyrrell.